Welcome to Functional Medicine Foundations podcast, where we explore root cause medicine, engage in conversation with functional and integrative medicine experts, and build community with like-minded health seekers. I'm your host, Amber Warren. Let's dig deeper. Hi, everybody. We're back here with Dr. David Mesnick. To talk about scars and prolotherapy, Dr. David Mesnick is a board-certified medical doctor who offers in-person and telemedicine care from the Functional Medicine of Idaho Eagle Clinic. Dr. Mesnick offers functional medicine, sports medicine, functional immunology, and primary care for both adults and teenagers. He specializes in sports and orthopedic medicine, internal medicine, frequency-specific microcurrent scars, homeopathy, prolotherapy, and low-level laser treatments. He has developed a unique program to heal the brain after concussion that integrates diet, supplements, sleep, exercise, and microcurrent and brain training to heal the brain after concussion. He applies this to other brain-based disorders, including cognitive impairment and dementia. He has a special interest in autoimmune disorders and has studied functional immunology. He's one of the top 10 clinicians in the world with frequency-specific microcurrent, and he teaches at microcurrent meetings. He is very experienced in prolotherapy, regenerative injections to build more ligament to stabilize a joint or area of the spine. After his internal medicine residency in Seattle, Dr. Mesnick completed a fellowship in sports medicine. Dr. Mesnick has more than 24 years of experience in functional medicine, and he's author of the book Conditioning for Outdoor Fitness. And he's also helped in writing textbook chapters on arthritis and concussions. Dr. Mesnick received his doctorate of medicine from the University of California, San Francisco. He is certified through the Institute for Functional Medicine, and he also has studied in the French School of Homeopathy. And we couldn't be more thrilled to have him on our team. So let's start the conversation talking about scars.
Okay.
So let's just dive right in. How do scars cause issues, cause pain?
This is really an underthought of thing by most doctors. So scars, first let's talk about how people get a scar, okay? They can get a scar from, of course, having a surgery. The surgery can go fine, but the scar can still have problems in the body. I'll explain that. They can get a scar from a burn. They can get a scar from immunization. They can get a scar from a bruise, you know, like an abrasion. That there are internal scars. They're called adhesions. So scars can cause problems in a number of ways. One, the scar can hurt. Mm-hmm. Two, the scar can have a pulling effect on something else called a fascial restriction. Mm-hmm. So you could literally have a scar in the abdomen that is affecting the shoulder. Mm-hmm. You have a scar in the abdomen that's affecting the back. So scars also can affect muscle strength, which is really fascinating. And that's really fun to test on physical exam. And the medical assistants we have at the Eagle Clinic have been like, their eyebrows are like, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. This is and then you can demonstrate it right after the treatment. Now these muscles are stronger. The other thing scars can do is increase pain in other parts of the body. That's called pain sensitization. So they can be a something that precipitates chronic pain or that just contributes to it. Then scars can affect internal function. So scars can affect, like a scar in the abdomen, can affect gut motility and gut function. Scars over the chest can affect the heart and the lungs. So they can affect internal function too. And that's probably a good summary of what they can do in the body.
So the way you're describing a scar, you don't have to physically see anything externally.
Well, yes, for the external scars. So most of what I'm talking about now are the ones you can see. Okay. There's the adhesions that are most common after abdominal surgeries that can cause problems because they're almost like blocking the motility of the gut. Okay. So that would be called an adhesion. But mostly I'm talking about the ones that are on the surface that you can see. Mm-hmm. Are probably the most problematic.
But so a lot of people are affected because how many people haven't had some kind of procedure, right, surgery, right, some kind of injection? Doesn't necessarily have to be a vaccine. It could be a B-complex injection.
What if you had a biopsy? What if a patient has a biopsy and like of something, even if it was benign, and that scar can cause a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could tell you story. I mean, I probably treated 5,000 scars in my career, but I tell you story after story about how this occurs. And sometimes, they're having a problem now, but the scar was from 7 years ago.
Yeah, so that doesn't the issue doesn't have to happen right away.
No, it doesn't.
Years later.
Yeah.
So interesting. Yeah. So how specifically does a scar limit healing in either that area of the body or another area of the body?
Well, there's different theories. Okay. So I actually wrote a book chapter on this. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be published in a book called The Trigger Point Manual. But for a long story, a lot of chapters never were published in that book because the editor passed away. So I spent a long time putting these theories together. So one way, if the scar sends out aberrant signaling to the spinal cord in the same sections that muscles are supposed to be controlled, that scar can be affecting muscle strength. That's called recruitment. Mm-hmm. That's very common, actually, where something's weaker than it should be. It's just not recruiting well. If a scar actually, there's a theory, and a lot of acupuncturists will agree with me, that if the scar goes through an acupuncture meridian, it will block the meridian partially or fully. Probably not fully, but it will block it. And then there's the fascial pull theory, where the fascia gets bound up around the scar. So there's a lot of reasons why scars can cause a problem. And the other way is if it's a keloid. Mm-hmm. So a keloid scar is this thick red scar that is
going to... Typically raised.
Raised, thick, red. The keloids are usually uncomfortable. Some people produce them more than other people.
Why is that? I've heard a lot of different theories on why people keloid.
Well, there's a lot of people that will tell you that the ones that do it, they have some issues in their immune system. Mm-hmm. So they produce more what's called, they have more collagen and fibroblastic development more than the scar, more than, the, like let's say someone has a surgery and they only need a certain amount of a scar to, you know, close off after the surgery or, mm-hmm. or they get a cut or something. They produce way too much and it turns, and then there's all this increased capillaries and blood flow. And so there's different theories as to why that occurs. Often people will tell you it runs in their family.
Right.
And they're more likely to have more than one of them.
Right. And is that true for the adhesions under the surface as well? They're more likely to recruit the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. But a lot of people can have adhesions. They don't even know about it. Yeah. You know, like they had an abdominal surgery and then they have motility problems or gut problems or... Because there can be adhesions in the gut.
Yeah. And it might not be, and this is where I love functional medicine, it might not be just the adhesion that's causing an issue, but it could be multifactorial. And the adhesion could be one thing that's really limiting one's ability to heal
right.
with regards to gut health or healthy
digestion. Well, that brings up a really important point, which I like, when I teach functional medicine to other docs, I like to talk about this thing called points of leverage.
You do a great job teaching
what this that. Is. What is one thing that we could work on for you that would have the biggest effect in helping your body get better?
Yeah.
And I would always say, you know, because what I do with my patients is I do something, I talk to them about staging. Mm-hmm. It's not just like you got this and you need that, or we're only going to do this. It's like, okay, let's look at a timeline on what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes in healing pain or orthopedic things or gut things or whatever, I will assess the scars. And I'll say the first part of your treatment is going to be treating these scars. And then after we get done with that, then we're going to move on to this. So that's staging. But I find profound benefits from doing it. You know, and I don't treat every scar in everybody's body. I test them. I take a good history. But oftentimes they're related to their current problem. It may not be the only thing.
Right.
But it's often one of the big factors.
Okay. So you say all scars... Not all scars might be causing issues.
Right.
So how do you evaluate that scar and know if it's problematic?
Okay, so one thing this gets into some interesting material. I say, okay, so it turns out that scars that are related to a traumatic incident have a storage of emotions in the limbic system in the brain, and those have been determined to be some of the most significant scars that keep acting up. So if someone had a surgery, was something was going on in their life that wasn't good, or they didn't have support, or they were, you know, what if they didn't like their surgeon or the surgery didn't go well? I mean, there's all these emotions that go in there with that scar. Mm-hmm. So those scars often become persistent issues in the body. That's called sort of the limbic system, emotional aspects of some scars. Then keloids are almost always a problem, those thick ones. I take a history and say, did you develop any problems within 1 year of this particular scar? I remember years ago, this lady said, you know, I had a C-section scar. And within 5 months of that, my back started hurting, my neck started hurting. And she had chronic pain at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I assessed that, treated that, and the neck pain and the back pain went away. Wow. I mean, you know, sometimes it takes other things too. Right, it might take physical therapy, chiropractic, some other stuff, but this was a big deal. Yeah. So these are often factors in people, and oftentimes nobody asks about it.
Yeah. And I love the example. I love your points of leverage discussion, but it's also, we talked about like the legs on a stool, right? Maybe a stool might have four legs and you've taken care of three, right? Maybe you've managed the stress, healed the adrenals, maybe you've balanced the hormones and fixed some nutrient deficiencies. But if there's still one leg that's problematic and it might be a scar adhesion, that's, you can't, you know.
It depends how big a factor it is, yeah. But I'll tell you, people ask me, you know, hey, what do you think is some of the biggest interventions you're going to do that are going to help people heal? I mean, one of those would be scar treatments.
Interesting that you would say.
And
that.
Because it's a big, I have found it to be a big factor.
Okay.
And maybe that's also because for a lot of these people, the emotional stuff is a big factor that got stored in there. And the limbic system is still acting up. And then, because whenever I treat a scar, I ask people to talk about stuff.
I've seen you do it.
And it's they really just, sometimes what you hear is like, you know, I always have a box of Kleenex in the room and just like get ready to hear it, because sometimes it's very interesting material that, you know, that needs to be unloaded.
Can you define the limbic system for our listeners and viewers?
Yeah, so the limbic system is deeper in the brain, and it consists of a bunch of different parts, and it's really, I mean, it partially consists of the hippocampus, which is a memory center of the brain, but this is, the limbic system is related to the memory center and the, it's like stored emotions. So the limbic system is like stored emotional memories, but it affects things in the body. Like the sympathetic nervous system can be hyperactive in people with these kind of issues. That's why there's so many different limbic system treatments out there.
So do you find that combining some of the limbic system treatments that we recommend with the scar therapy, sometimes those really go hand in hand to provide success?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're always recommending, if there's emotions tied to a scar adhesion, you're always recommending some of the brain rewiring, DNRS, program, those different kind of.
Yes and no.
Oh.
Because I want the ones that are the easiest for the patient.
Fair.
So what I usually start with is tapping.
Okay.
And we actually have one of our health coaches teaches people tap. But I just find like that whole thing about tapping acupuncture points is very effective. That the whole theory is it helps the limbic system. It's quick. And I think it's easier to learn than DNRS or the Gupta program. I mean, certainly if people need that, I'll recommend those things. But that's one of the first things I recommend.
Great.
Along with, you know, treating the scars.
Okay. I love that. So let's dig into treatment. What kind of treatments do you do for the different scars that you
assess? Depends who the patient is.
Okay.
And it depends where the scars are.
Okay.
If they're a kid, I almost never inject them. I'll treat them with laser or frequency-specific microcurrent.
Because just the trauma of the injection. Yeah.
I mean, the scar injection is a gold standard. Mm-hmm. And you do it with local anesthetic.
Right.
Like lidocaine or procaine or something. So that's what I do with adults. And it's a tiny needle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 30-gauge needle. The funny thing is, with needles, the higher the number, the smaller it is. Yeah. So the gold standard is injection with local anesthetic along the whole length of the scar. And that's a whole field called neural therapy, NEURAL, that originated in Germany many, many years ago. There's whole courses on it, whole atlases about it. So that is the gold standard, and that's my preference, because you do it in, like, you do the first one, and then you do the second one in 10 to 14 days. along with the emotional technique, and then it's done, usually unless it's a keloid. But for kids, then we'll use the laser or microcurrent or both. If it's on the face, it depends where it is.
Okay.
One of the most interesting thing about scar injections is that it can have a cosmetic benefit. But since I'm not a cosmetic dermatologist, I don't push this. But I tell people, you know what? The scar could be more difficult to find, but we're not doing it for that reason.
Right.
Therefore, some people want it for that reason. And I would say, you need to understand I'm not doing it for that reason, but there are some areas on the face that you can do. I mean, I've gotten very fine-tuned with this, so I can do it on most people on their face as a cosmetic thing, but we're still not doing it for cosmetic things. Like, I'll do a scar on the face for headaches, something like that, but not for cosmetic, you know, come. Or if the scar hurts,
right,
do it for that reason too.
So two scar injections, 10 to 14 days apart.
Yes.
What about if you're going to use frequency-specific microcurrent for that scar? How many sessions?
Well, this is interesting because the reason to use that would be if I think it's got deeper scars below the surface.
Okay.
And that's where it gets into your question about adhesions, because people can have adhesions not only in the gut, they can have it in over the musculoskeletal system. Sometimes two or three visits for that,
okay,
if I think they've got the adhesions. But if I'm going to just treat a scar with that, I'll probably do a combination of laser and microcurrent, two to three. It usually requires more sessions than injection.
Okay, fair. I'm kind of a definition person. So frequency-specific microcurrent, can you define what that is and how that helps the body?
Yes.
Okay.
My favorite three-letter word.
I know
well, the blood-brain barrier.
I know. You have a lot of them.
it's abbreviated FSM.
Yep.
It's a different type of microcurrent than all other microcurrent treatments out there. So in microcurrent treatment, there's an A channel, a B channel, or channel 1 and channel 2. The more current nomenclature is channel 1 and channel 2. So channel 1 is a frequency that deals with a condition like inflammation, which is 40, or scarring, which is 13, or calcification, which is 91. So there's a channel 1, but the B channel is the tissue, like the nerve, 396, or the blood vessel capillaries, 162. So frequency-specific microcurrent combines not only a channel 1 and a channel 2 frequency, but the right sequencing of when those pairs need to be ordered, because you can't just run them randomly,
right,
and the right amount of time and at the right microcurrent to treat something. And the interesting thing is the best way to do it is to treat the nervous system first and then to figure out all the tissues that have the issues and use the microcurrent programs to treat the underlying factors, like it could be a scar or it could be other things you're trying to treat. Like oftentimes if I'm treating a scar that has deeper scarring than just the surface, I'm going to treat a nerve too, because the nerves can get scars around them. So then, for instance, one of the frequency pairs might be 13 for scarring and 396 for the nerve.
Interesting.
And then in order to make it work even better, you have to apply a little bit of motion to the area, and then the adhesions dissolve.
And you're using this microcurrent for so much more than just scars and talked about in previous episodes.
Yeah, we're using it for neck problems, any kind of brain problem, any kind of orthopedic problem, healing tendons, healing joints, healing nerves, healing discs, neuropathy.
Healing the gut?
Vagus nerve issues, healing the gut, healing the barriers like the blood-brain barrier and the gut barrier, SIBO, so many things.
So awesome. So back to the scars and the adhesions, what kind of outcomes are you looking for? What are you hoping to see if you feel like you're getting where you want to go?
It depends what the patient presents with. If they're presenting with pain, I want the pain to go way down or go away. If I think the scars are affecting muscle spasms and trigger points, then I want to treat the scars and have those muscle spasms and trigger points go away.
Okay.
I want the muscles to get recruited so they're normal. I want to take away all the issues that the scars are causing in that particular patient.
Okay.
And so It really depends on what that patient's presenting with, because sometimes they're not coming in for the scar. They're coming in for this pain, that pain, and so I'll decide whether I think the scars are going to be like a point of leverage, and oftentimes they are.
So you have a ton of experience in scar injections, in this kind of treatment modality. How have you been able to fine-tune your technique along the way?
Well, I decided a long time ago that the tinier the needle, the better.
Okay.
I used to use a 27-gauge needle.
Oh, wow.
And, well, it's a little bigger than a 30-gauge needle. I even used to use a 1.5-inch needle, try to thread the whole thing in there.
Yeah.
The crazy thing, it turns out the most comfortable needle for people to experience is a 30-gauge half-inch needle. Hmm. And I even used to use a 30-gauge 1-inch needle, and it was too hard to thread in there. And so then there's a needle technique called a bent needle technique where you actually bend the needle in the sheath and thread it in and inject while you're going in and going out. So I've sort of developed this over the years.
Cool. Really cool. Any other benefits of these injections, these scar injections you're doing?
Well, they can increase muscle strength. They can decrease, you know, back pain, neck pain, mm-hmm. headaches, decrease pain in general. I have one patient. I've had a lot of patients like this, but I just say I had a patient in the past 6 months that had a lot of scars on her belly. You know, some of the worst scars are tummy tuck scars. They cause havoc in the body. They might be used to, like, tuck the skin, but there's a lot of people with those scars that are having a lot of problems. She was severely constipated. After 2 scar treatments, she was having bowel movements on her own, no laxatives. Wow. So it can affect things like that. You know, like gut function, improving gut function.
Right.
I've had people say their breathing was easier. You know, I had a lady with a thyroid scar who had like 50% of range of motion of her neck. And then she had a thyroid scar and she had a C-section scar. She didn't want to do the C-section scar initially. So we did the thyroid scar and she gained about 20 degrees just from that, sitting there. Wow. And then we checked her C-section scar and said, I think we can give you more motion. And then did that and she's got full range of motion
of
her neck.
Yeah, that's cool.
We didn't even touch her neck.
So a lot of people listening are probably like, well, goodness, I've had a procedure. I've had this meniscectomy on my knee. How do they know if they'd benefit from maybe scar injection, scar treatment?
Well, they probably need an evaluation, a consult visit. Yeah. But, you know, they probably have some symptoms they want to be helped with.
Some kind of ailment.
Yeah, because I don't know that I'd say everybody with scars needs to be evaluated. You got to have something going on. But I'll tell you this, if someone says, I want to be really healthy, can you just check these out?
Yeah.
It's probably not a bad idea to treat them.
Yeah.
There's no major side effects.
Do you see scars or adhesion increasing your risk of injury?
Yes.
Okay. How so?
Because, well, what if someone's not recruiting their abdominal muscles and their core? The most common weaknesses people have around their hip girdle and their butt. Yeah. And so if you get those things working, they're less likely to fall. So, yeah, the scars can contribute to that, and treating them can lead to less risk.
Yeah, I love it. So let's move on and talk a little bit about prolotherapy.
Okay.
Or hypermobile joints and tendons. So hypermobility, can you speak to just that general term?
Yeah, so that's excessive mobility of a joint or joints, but it's often associated with other issues, like people can have changes in their skin, like people with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, virtually all of them have hypermobility. So people with hypermobile joints can have clunking noises. They can feel the joint goes out of alignment. They can have breathing problems. They can have low back pain, neck pain. They can have thumb pain, shoulder pain. I mean, there's so many things that can go on. You don't have to have a connective tissue disorder to have this. You could even just have had an injury that didn't heal well, and then you could end up with a hypermobile joint. And guess what that risks us for? Osteoarthritis. Yeah. So,
or damage to the joint.
Yeah, because it's shearing too much. So that's, it's a risk for that. But also, one of the things that most people don't learn when they go to massage therapists, the most common reason why muscles stay in tight patterns or trigger points is the joint beneath, the joint near it is hypermobile.
Oh, so
then the muscles hold on really tight to guard the area. Yeah. And you could do massages, but the thing keep, those muscles keep going back to.
Do you think our physical therapist colleagues are good at picking up on this?
I've been trying to give lectures. I did it in the Seattle area when I was there, and now I'm doing it in the Treasure Valley and the whole Boise Eagle Meridian area to just educate people about this.
Okay.
And I find the physical therapists didn't know much about this, actually. Or they're really interested in it, though.
Yeah, we've got some great PTs in our valley.
Yeah.
How common is this issue?
Well, hypermobility, you know, it's interesting. Depending on, this is another interesting thing of physical therapists. Depending on the training, if they're manually trained, they are going to know about hypermobility. Mm-hmm. But only certain PTs can really do the stress testing of the joints.
Right.
It's common.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people with thumb pain, they're hypermobile in the CMC joint of the thumb. It's
so it
moving
might not
too
just
much.
Be arthritis in that joint. It might also be hypermobility.
Yeah, or it might not be arthritis, but it might, you know, hypermobile joints usually hurt.
Yeah.
Say the person with a car accident, if it's significant enough, they might have a hypermobile facet joint. And then, you know, or someone that says, I got to go to the chiropractor frequently. Well, you know, I'm for good chiropractic, but not having to go frequently and continuously.
There's something bigger going on. If
you're we have to be able to assess for hypermobile joints. And so there's people with headaches that have hypermobile joints in the neck. I've seen people that have rib hypermobile joints that have back pain that nobody's been able to figure out. Mm-hmm. Sacroiliac in the low back, it's hypermobile and leads to problems with weakness in the legs and the glutes and the thighs. And then can lead to a buckling when people walk. It's very common.
Okay.
It needs to be thought of more because there's ways to fix it. So very common. And like I said, some people have these connective tissue disorders like Ehlers-Danlos. Those people all have hypermobile joints.
Right.
But there's also Marfan syndrome where people have really long arms and maybe aortic valve problems. They have some hypermobile joints, ligament looseness. But a lot of other people, they just have one or two joints that are hypermobile. They don't have the whole, you know, they don't have a connective tissue problem. They just, they have had injuries. Yeah. And if an injury doesn't heal fully, it could leave us with a hypermobile joint.
So I assume your evaluation of this is physical exam, physical exam, physical exam.
Yeah. It's also history, of course.
Yeah,
it's like
hearing the story.
Does this joint pop? Does it go out of alignment? Do you know it goes out of alignment? Like for the sacroiliac joint, it is one of the most common causes of chronic back pain that have been missed. Because if everybody's looking for a disc, it's not a disc. It's below that.
So a hypermobile SI joint is one of the most common causes of low back pain.
Of missed low back pain, missed chronic low back pain. Or surgeries that went on in discs that didn't work.
Yeah.
Because there was this thing going on down below. So yeah, so it's very common.
Mm.
It leads to pain on almost, you know, like the triangular lines of the sacroiliac, anywhere along that. People with persistent neck pain often have a hypermobile joint. You know, people that pop their shoulders in and out, that's hypermobile shoulder joints.
Okay.
This can happen anywhere in the body.
How do you treat it?
And people with loose ligaments can have flattened arches in their feet.
Oh.
And that's hypermobile.
Just because
fascia may get loose, more like the spring ligament, and on the arch, the ligaments that hold up the arch can be loose.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your treatment?
Well, first of all, to tell people to do certain things, like, you know, if you have hypermobility in your back, you better sleep with a pillow between your knees. I mean, I don't want people falling. You get a better of a pillow that supports your neck, whatever it is. You want your shoulder to be in neutral while you're sleeping. Then, so I give people a lot of precautions. The other thing is people have hypermobility in their feet, their knee, or their back. I want them in stable shoes.
Yeah.
So I really want everybody in, you know, good shoes that are appropriate for them. And then prolotherapy is a injection technique in which the ligaments are injected, the joint capsule injected, and then people build more collagen and fibroblasts that actually build and stabilize the joint. What a lot of people don't realize is PRP is a type of prolotherapy, because prolotherapy was the original treatment. Mm-hmm. And then, well, PRP is basically taking people's blood and processing it and putting the platelet-rich factors in to produce a similar thing that happens with prolotherapy. So both of those things can be done. I think prolotherapy is preferable most of the time. PRP is pretty good for filling in a tendon, but prolotherapy can actually use for chronic tendonitis, which is called tendinopathy. Mm-hmm. So that's usually the treatment.
Okay. How long have you been doing prolotherapy?
A long time.
And how else are
26 years.
That's amazing. And how else are you utilizing prolotherapy for more than just hypermobile joints?
For tendons. So if someone comes in and they said, I've had a pain in this tendon for a long time, for most of them, I'm going to want to get an ultrasound, a musculoskeletal ultrasound of that tendon. And if it's degenerative or it has what's called tendinopathy, then doing regenerative injections there can regenerate those tendons. Or if they have small partial tears or something, it's very good for tendons too.
What else are we doing for degenerative tendons?
Frequency-specific microcurrent.
I figured.
And laser.
And laser, okay.
Yeah. I especially use that for Achilles. Oh. Yeah, it's very good.
And that's combining a nagging issue, that chronic insertional Achilles tendonitis.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Right.
Do the same injection procedures work for tendon tears or chronic tendonitis? Are you using the same?
Yeah, I mean, I use prolotherapy, and I've definitely treated with PRP as well.
Okay.
It just depends on the case. I think most people tolerate prolotherapy with dextrose, and there may be some other things that I'll use in my injections. They tolerate it, but PRP can be quite uncomfortable.
Right.
Quite painful.
Right. So how does someone know if they have a true tendinopathy if they don't have this musculoskeletal ultrasound? Are there ways symptomatically that we can?
The tendon hurts at the bony junction where it attaches.
Okay.
Like if they have a shoulder tendinopathy, when they lower their shoulder, it's going to hurt. When they're sleeping in bed, it hurts. It's gone on usually for more than 2 months. This is not like a tendonitis. This is called tendinopathy, and it's very common. Mm-hmm. But the problem is if someone who's looking at this does not realize what it is, they're not going to treat it correctly.
Does an MRI pick it up?
Yes.
Okay.
But the nice thing is a musculoskeletal ultrasound picks it up and is less expensive and less invasive and doesn't spin your hydrogen atoms.
Yeah.
So it's my preferred way to diagnose it.
So much more benign than getting
an MRI. I think it's probably good to really diagnose tendinopathy as opposed to just assuming it's going on. I mean, I'll treat some people that don't want to get an ultrasound.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do injections unless we have ultrasound to say, yes, it's definitely tendinopathy.
Right.
But if anybody's interested, I wrote a chapter in a book on tendinopathy.
And what's that book called?
It's called Metabolic Therapies in Orthopedics.
Love it. Oh, so cool.
It shows ultrasounds and all the definition of tendonitis versus tendinopathy and the treatments and all that.
So when we're talking about prolotherapy for tendinopathy or loose joints or even back to talking about scar injections, why is this kind of idea of a head-to-toe evaluation, like a functional assessment, necessary when it might just be an isolated issue, like just a knee problem?
Well, I mean, one of the things that a clinician has to do is figure out in anybody what is causing their symptoms, not just labeling the thing. You got a tendonitis or you got this. I mean, I try to stay away from, you got this, you need that. So one of my things that I'm always talking about is when I teach is figure out all the tissues involved, all the factors involved. Mm-hmm. What is the status of the tissues? Is it degenerative, torn, loose? What's going on with the pain processing system? So when you look at all that stuff and then, you have a knee problem. Okay, what's going on with your feet? What's going on with your hips? What's going on with the nervous system that regulates the area? Otherwise, you have incomplete treatment. You know, and I like to do really complete treatment and really look at all the issues that that are involved. And many times the knee is the innocent bystander.
Right.
And what if someone has weak muscles around the hip? What if that's related to a scar? You get that corrected and the knee tracks better.
Yeah.
Well, if you just start treating the knee, you might not get anywhere.
Right. So something I've been training in lately to be able to utilize in my practice is peptide therapy, these peptide molecules. And we talked about it in previous interviews with both Dr. Holehouse and Josiah. Right. How are you utilizing peptide therapy in your practice, especially in your treatment of musculoskeletal disorders?
Okay.
I had to go there. I'm sorry.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, I mean, there are times when I think it could be useful to add some peptides to the prolotherapy. There can be. I do that on a very individual basis. Mm-hmm. BPC-157 can be helpful. There's another one called TB-500. Mm-hmm. They can be very helpful. I mean, you know, if people take BPC-157 internally, it's more helping the gut.
Right.
If you inject it near the area, it will help the musculoskeletal system more. So those are the main ones that I think, you know, that I think about with, you know, sort of regenerative medicine.
Cool. No, I love it. It's just a hot topic right now, and we've touched on it a little bit, so I was just curious how you're really utilizing it.
Yeah.
Anything else that we can touch on? Prolotherapy, scar treatment, scar injections that we didn't cover?
Well, I just think it's important for people to be evaluated. Yeah. You know, it's like you don't want to guess, do you have an issue like this? Like, if a person has persistent muscle spasms, persistent neck pain, back pain, persistent joint pain, they should be evaluated for this. Physical therapists may be able to evaluate them.
Okay.
Someone has to be able to test for this. I mean, when I see a patient, I test every joint I'm looking at for, you know, is it loose, isn't it? There are imaging studies, you know, there's imaging studies that can be done in the neck. Believe it or not, some of the ligaments of the neck need to be tested with, you know, special views of the neck, x-rays of the neck, like flexion, extension, and even open mouth, because the open mouth view is the only one that shows the upper cervical area. If someone's wondering about scars, they should be checked out for it. It's like they're, you know, just being checked out for these things as part of someone's issue, or maybe all of someone's issue, is just important, because sometimes, you know, it's like people tell me, wow, why didn't anybody else check for this or look for this? It's often an underlying issue, like the hypermobility or the scars. They should just be checked for.
Yeah. No, so important, and not well known enough out there in our community.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Dr. Musnick. You know that I end my interviews with a piece of advice that you offer your patient population that has moved the needle the most for them. What would that be?
Well, I don't want to say the same thing I said in another podcast.
If that's really what it is, you can.
No, I'm going to talk about something different.
Okay.
We could do a whole podcast on this. having a good attitude. So I like to ask my patients, is there any part of you that doesn't want to get better? Is there any part of you that feels so hopeless? Or is there any part of you that feels like this won't work? And then countering it with, what would you say to your best friend? You know, what would you have your best friend say? Yeah. Even like saying 3 times a day, I can get better. Or there's reason for help, hope. In my case, like it's like an exercise, an attitude exercise that I think can help people. So, you know, for any of our listeners, think about some kind of attitude that you want to instill. And just like anything, you got to practice it, you know, and it's a habit. Mm-hmm. Like, have a habit of having a good attitude.
Glass half full.
Right. And regarding your health, mm-hmm. design a phrase that you can say that will encourage better healing, better health, improved health. Say it 3 times a day until you believe it.
I mean, there's good data on that, right? That self-fulfilling prophecy, that belief mentality that you can heal.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing data on that.
Yeah, no, it really helps. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Thank you, Dr. Musnick. Thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Functional Medicine Foundations podcast. For more information on topics covered today, programs offered at FMF, and the highest quality of supplements and more, go to funmedfoundations.com.